What?
College matters.
What?
College matters. Matters.
Really?
For sure. College matters.
Alma matters. Matters.
For me, the scholarship, I didn't know too much about this like before winning it, but mm-hmm. it really means having a network of experts and amazing mentors in pretty much every field to guide me and help me if I ever become mm-hmm. lost or if I ever do need some guidance. Uh-huh. It's like almost opening a treasure chest with a plethora of resources and opportunities. And it also validates me. I mean, seeing that email and telling my family was so rewarding.
That is Gianna Thomas, 2023 Koch Scholar and a recent graduate of Middletown High School in Connecticut. Hello, I'm your host, Venkat Raman. With this episode, we continue a select set of conversations with high schoolers about their outlook for their futures. We are joined by Gianna Thomas, who will be a freshman at Yale University in the fall of 2023. Gianna's interest in the cellular aspects of science grew through high school. Starting with an interest in viruses led to virology and epidemiology and a broader interest in public health. Her love for STEM led to innovating a STEM curriculum for kindergartners and first graders. In this podcast, Gianna talks about her passion for public health, the STEM curriculum, winning the Coca-Cola scholarship, her college search process, and her advice for high schoolers. Now, before we jump into the podcast, here are the high fives, five highlights from the podcast.
I didn't really focus on the number of APs that I took, but definitely more on dual enrollment and non-credit courses, as these really allowed me to personalize the courses and the types of science that I did, if that makes sense. I'm very passionate about public health, and I really tried to keep this sort of idea as a core of the things that I did in high school, including my extracurriculars and courses. For me, this meant involving public policy and government through health policy and involving sociology and psychology to better work with populations. And I really maintained like the ethics and the ethics of the work that I was doing as a pillar to make sure that I was always sort of making equitable strides in the work that I did. What I also loved about this curriculum from PLTW was that it was based on complex ideas. And for me, this meant teaching kindergartners and first graders topics such as evolution, natural selection, and astronomy. But it was up to me how to figure out how to guide the curriculum and how to teach six-year-olds normally what are 16-year-olds concepts. Going into the college process, I knew for a long time that it was pretty much a full ride over everything. I remember with my college access manager at Thrive Scholars, an community-based organization that I was a part of, there was some pushback over my original college list being 124 schools. Do not by any means hold yourself to the same standards of the people around you. So like, don't be afraid to apply to 50 schools just because everyone around you is applying to 20. And don't be discouraged when it's like Questbridge or it's early decision day and you see all of your peers around you have just gotten into like Harvard, Yale, or Stanford. And you know that it'll be months until, you know, like you get into a school. So don't compare yourself.
These were the high fives brought to you by
College Matters.
Alma Matters.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For my newsletter, visit almamatters.substack.com. Now, I'm sure you want to hear the entire podcast with Gianna. So without further ado, here's the podcast with Gianna Thomas.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us who you are, and then we can sort of go from there.
Yeah, so I'm from Middletown, Connecticut, which is a pretty small suburban town. I'm going to Yale University this fall, class of 2027, as a first-year student. And in high school, I was pretty involved in sort of like medicine and healthcare from, I think, freshman year. I knew that I always wanted to kind of be in that scope, but It was definitely around the pandemic where I realized that it was public health where I wanted to be. And I'm still not 100% decided on where that might fall in public health, but I'm definitely someone who's interested in public health. I'm very interested in community involvement. I'm the youngest sibling, so I think that's also definitely helped me seeing my siblings go through similar processes with high school and then like looking into college. I think that that's also really helped me, but I also was definitely someone in high school and still am now who was very interested in needing and attaining scholarships to help me progress through college and even going into medical school. But yeah, I think that that pretty sums up like kind of my high school journey a little bit.
Tell us about your high school, the kinds of things you were involved in, kinds of courses you liked, your passions, your interests.
Yeah, so to start off with courses, I think I was definitely an atypical student in some regards. I didn't really focus on the number of APs that I took, but definitely more on dual enrollment and non-credit courses, as these really allowed me to personalize the courses and the types of science that I did, if that makes sense. For me, this meant taking biochemistry in a class on the chemistry of DNA instead of AP chemistry and AP biology, because I really wanted to sort of specialize my education in a certain way and diversify myself from a very good applicant pool at top schools that would be taking these top level classes. I also supplemented those kind of unique courses with the non-creditors, as I called them, including Epidemics 1, 2, and 3 at the University of Hong Kong and John Snow and the cholera epidemic of 1854 at Harvard, just for a couple examples. So for me, these really specialized, unique courses allowed me to separate myself from the rest of the applicant pool in a certain way. I really wanted to find almost every single way that I could stand out, and these definitely allowed me to.
You talked about biochemistry and how did you find interest in that, or how do you discover those courses? I mean, I know they are out there. How do you know it's for you?
So for me, I knew that like looking at the curriculum of AP biology and like AP chemistry, for example, I wasn't really interested in how sort of like largely they focus. I knew that for me, for example, for the chemistry of DNA and genomics, I really liked how that one delved into DNA. I first like sort of got into the science realm my freshman year of high school from taking an anatomy and physiology class at a local community college. And from there, I really liked how expansive that specific course was. But there were a few things that I really, really liked in it. And it was mostly like cellular level stuff. So, for example, like learning about DNA, learning about processes that occur in our body as opposed to like the bones and such. So, I definitely knew like I wanted to focus on that. And then going beyond those processes, looking at sort of those outside environmental causes that can impact our bodies and impact those inner processes. And for me, that really came about with viruses. So I really liked how viruses sort of interacted and attacked our bodies on the cellular level. So that's kind of how I got interested in those kind of courses. And for biochemistry specifically, I was doing course selection and I really wanted something that was similar to AP bio, similar to AP chemistry, but also was a little narrower science sort of course, so I decided on biochemistry. Yeah, I would say I was more into like I guess research and sort of things to do in the public health scope. I did a sport freshman year and then COVID derailed it a little bit. But throughout high school and still currently, I'm very passionate about public health. And I really tried to keep this sort of idea as a core of the things that I did in high school, including my extracurriculars and courses. For me, this meant involving public policy and government through health policy and involving sociology and psychology to better work with populations. And I really maintained like the ethics of the work that I was doing as a pillar to make sure that I was always sort of making equitable strides in the work that I did, to make sure that the work I was doing was very much like counting for something. But for epidemiology and virology specifically, I first became interested in this specific field from a course. It was titled Global Change in Infectious Disease. And taking this course during the pandemic, I definitely have always regarded it as sort of the perfect storm to spark that initial flame for my love of this field. And from that sort of perfect situation, I then became involved in creating a public health committee in the Morrell Youth Cabinet that I was president of, and worked with my local government to really involve youth into discussions that we were having, like regarding health policies and the decisions that were being made regarding to like COVID-19 policies and mandates in place. Additionally, mm-hmm. within this realm, I had the privilege of being a panelist speaker with Yale University Public Health, in which I was able to advocate for community ideals during the pandemic and sort of like combine my research as well in the communications with communities to help create policies at the state level that were as influenced by the people as it was by the science. So for me, I didn't want just my research sort of have a weight and the ideas that were being sort of like put into the public space or have that much of an impact solely. I really wanted to involve communities as much as I could to an equal level or even more. For me, it was important mm-hmm. that we had the ideas of communities as well as sort of science sort of permeating.
Now, what kind of research did you do? Did you do actual research? I mean, I understand the public policy realm and educating and creating awareness. Did you get involved in any kind of research that took you to sort of the next level?
I don't have like any specific like publications or anything like related to that. For me, my research was definitely pretty atypical. A lot of the things that I did were a little bit atypical. Like I wasn't like, I guess, gearing up daily to go like into a lab, but it was more for the education side specifically. I was doing a lot of research into child psychology and the ways that children best learn, just innovate STEM curriculum. And then for the actual science side specifically, I researched the Aedes aegypti mosquito population in uh-huh. order to write my op-ed, and that did get published with Wesleyan University's Department of Biology, Environmental Science, and then like a couple local Connecticut areas.
You also got involved in some kind of STEM curriculum innovation. Mm-hmm. What was that?
So during the COVID pandemic, I firstly worked as a science presenter with my Board of Education. And mm-hmm. in this role, I pretty much was brought on to positively influence STEM curriculum. And for me to personalize that, I really wanted to discover the ways in which I could individualize learning and put the direction of instruction in the students' hands. Mm-hmm. So that following fall, I became an after-school teacher to begin. And I was certified in PLTW Learning Project Lead the Way. Mm. This allowed me to simultaneously integrate new learning models from PLTW.
Yeah.
And instructional models together to create sort of like a new type of classroom for my district. And I really wanted this to be one that was constructed by the students' interests. What I also loved about this curriculum from PLTW was that it was based on complex ideas. And for me, this meant teaching kindergartners and first graders topics such as evolution, natural selection, and astronomy. But it was up to me how to figure out how to guide the curriculum and how to teach six-year-olds, normally what are 16-year-olds concepts. And I found that by giving them the material first and allowing them to sort of figure out how do I navigate this, where do I start, how does my mind and not the teacher's mind best learn this information? And I sort of packaged this idea across my district and across other Connecticut schools to allow them to implement this new direction of learning into their classrooms. And I found that students were very receptive to it. Mm-hmm. When we sort of like strut away from like the normal ways of teaching, which are teachers sort of begin to instruct and then students try to understand it the best they can. I found that when students are given the material first and you allow them to feel that confusion and you sort of in a way force them to have to figure out how do I understand this? How do I learn this without direction or help? It allows them to learn in a completely different way, and it really restructures their entire educational career if you start them from a young age. So innovating STEM curriculum and sort of teaching models as a whole was really important to me throughout high school.
What vehicle did you use to teach them? I mean, obviously they are too young to read and absorb stuff. So, but I'm guessing you came up with some I don't know, some objects or presentations or some discussion? I mean, how did you put it all together? How did you communicate that to them?
Yeah, definitely. So I think sort of image-based and project-based learning was very important for especially the kindergartners and first graders, as writing and reading are not really their specialties.
Yeah.
But for me specifically, especially with students at such a young age, it was really important for me to ensure that they weren't discouraged in their learning. So yeah. If they were stronger in specifically for the life sciences curriculum, if they were stronger in maybe natural selection as opposed to astronomy, it was really important for me to allow them to really delve deeply into that one subject in which they found their interest in, instead of sort of forcing them to learn other material. While it was like a very balanced education in which they had access to all of these pathways, they were definitely allowed to focus more on one area than another. And another way in which I sort of directed their learning was through the PLTW activities and learning structures. And this meant that ideas such as evolution and natural selection were not dumbed down, but definitely made at the level for kindergartners and first graders. Mm-hmm. We were given sort of these ideas of camouflage, protection, and locomotion, and those were easily understandable by kindergartners and first graders as what 16-year-olds would know as evolutionary advantages, or the ways that animals and humans evolve to be advantageous to their survival. So in other words, it was telling kindergartners and first graders that camouflage allows chameleons to live safely and be protected from predators, as the predator cannot see them. So in some ways, it's a little bit of a looser connection, but the connection is definitely there. And that was really important for me to enforce, because going into middle school and then high school, I really wanted them to be familiar with these ideas and not be totally surprised when they came out, especially living in a district that has a lot of lower income students. I really wanted their education to already be supplemented for them going into college. So it's just beginning them at an already higher level in which they can continue on that path and be at the highest level possible upon entering high school and then college.
Why'd you even apply to the Koch Scholarship?
So for me, I applied to nearly every scholarship that I came across.
Okay.
And the 0.17% acceptance rate definitely scared me. And it put me off from applying for a little bit in the beginning. But it also motivated me to really make sure that the application that I submitted was crafted to the best of my ability. And going into college, I knew that to attend college and to really go into college with sort of the best foot forward, I did not want to incur any student loan debt. And I really didn't want to be like sort of tied down by that and always have that sort of dragging through my college years. So for me, the $20,000 was definitely the biggest motivator in the application process, especially because when I began applying, I had not yet gotten into college. So I didn't have any financial aid package. All I had were sort of calculators on the college's websites that I hadn't gotten into yet. So it was definitely a way to ensure that there would be this sort of safeguard in place if I did win the Koch Scholarship, that I would have $20,000 to finance my education.
So tell us about the application. Tell us about how you went about applying.
Yeah, so there are multiple phases for the application process. So step one, I believe, is you submit your extracurriculars, your leadership positions, and all of those. And I believe they ask sort of like a basic bio on what they were and what were your impacts. And for me, I really stretched that part to the limits. I was really driven in the way that I really wanted to show them everything that I did and showcase every little thing. I think that for people applying for the 2023-2024 cycle, it's really important that they mention every little thing. No thing is too small. I believe I've heard this on multiple occasions that the first step is read by computer. So it's based on scores that people will then look at. So for me, that was really important to make sure nothing was left behind. And then in the next process, I believe that there's like essays and they like ask not basic questions, but sort of things that you'll find in a supplemental essay. What are like the biggest struggles or obstacles? And there I talked about my research. And for me, the step was definitely the hardest because I am a bit of a procrastinator. So I had just gotten out of my research and my computer was dead, and I was running around Wesleyan University trying to find a laptop charger, and it was very, very stressful. But I ended up making it to the next stage, in which I was a regional finalist, and I had again just gotten out of my research, but I was definitely more prepared this time. And in the interview process, it is very, very atypical, in which they ask you very specific questions about your application. They don't ask you questions related to who are you, what have you done, just because they have all of that information from your essays and your extracurriculars. So I would just say be ready for very, very specific questions. I remember they asked me a question about a very minor extracurricular that I had. I don't even believe I was like president or a very major leadership role in it, but I was definitely caught a little bit off guard because I was expecting for them to ask about some of my upper level extracurriculars, but no, like they want to know everything about you and capture that full picture, which I really like.
So then what happened? I mean, then your interview, did you think it went well? Do you think you did well or?
A little bit. I mean, that question definitely caught me off guard. And I think going into like college interviews and such, I'm a little bit more prepared just because after like, I think the first like 3 to 5, I kind of knew going into them what to expect, sort of that idea of tell me about yourself, tell me who you are, what have you been involved in? I was sort of expecting questions like that. And then to be hit with something that was so specific based on one role. And I think my last extracurricular slot, it definitely scared me a little bit. I didn't even have too much to say about it. And it was also a 20-minute interview, which was definitely on the shorter end. So it just felt like it went by in a blur. But I think overall, I was a little bit scared. But I had won a couple other like awards and gotten into a couple schools, I think, by the interview process where I had a little bit of confidence, just a little bit, but I called my mom right after and I asked her, like, would you be mad at me if I didn't win the Koch scholarship? And so there were definitely fears sort of like permeating in the front of my mind, but a little bit of confidence in the back of my mind.
Well, you did win it. So what, I know, aside from the money, which is a great thing, what does it mean to you? What does it mean to win the scholarship?
For me, the scholarship, I didn't know too much about this like before winning it, but it really means having a network of experts and amazing mentors in pretty much every field to guide me and help me if I ever become lost or if I ever do need some guidance. It's like almost opening a treasure chest with a plethora of resources and opportunities. And it also validates me. I mean, seeing that email and telling my family was so rewarding. And it definitely helped solidify the idea in my mind that I am deserving and that my achievements and work that I put into high school were definitely worth it.
Okay, so let's switch gears and talk a little bit about your college process. Tell us how you went about it. I mean, what were some of your aspirations or goals? What is it that you were after? And what kind of process did you follow?
Yeah, so I guess like going into the college process, I knew for a long time that it was pretty much a full ride over everything. I remember with my college access manager at Thrive Scholars, a community-based organization that I was a part of, there was some pushback over my original college list being 124 schools with like not really any match versus fit or any of that sort of like finding your perfect school in there. But I look back at it and I laugh at it because I say that I'll find a school that fits me once I get into the school. I didn't really, and I still don't really understand the idea of like falling in love with a school that has like a 4% acceptance rate that you haven't even gotten into yet. So for me, I just wanted to put every single card on the table and then make my choice once I had gotten into the, all of the schools. Mm-hmm. And going into the process, I'm very undecided. I'm going in as a pre-med student and I'm very interested in public health still. Mm-hmm. But I also love the idea of getting my master's of public health or going to law school and doing environmental law or going mm-hmm. into epidemiological consulting. It's a unique time to be in because pretty much every pathway is at my fingertips. And I definitely have a little bit of like anxiousness and nervousness about that, you know, like mm-hmm. making sure I choose the right career and the right path as it determines my entire life. But going to Yale, it's definitely helpful because you have the resources to network, to learn from, and to interact with amazing people. It's very reassuring to have a lot of people in my corner and to have a lot of different ways in which I can navigate deciding my future career.
So how did you whittle down that list? I mean, what did you guys do?
So I guess in some ways, I never like the list, like never minimized. I applied to every school the day the application was due. So mm-hmm. Like I didn't really have a solidified college essay until January 1st that I was ready to send off to my regular decision schools. Mm-hmm. So I remember on like January 3rd, for example, I had just pulled an all-nighter because the night before on January 2nd, I again applied to, I think, like 8 schools. Mm-hmm. So I was very tired. And on January 3rd, I think I sent off like Yale, Caltech, Johns Hopkins. Like I think it was a lot of different schools.
Yeah.
And there were like 5 more that I couldn't even get to just because I truly did not have the time, which looking back on it, I definitely regret. I definitely wish I planned that out a little bit better, but I mean, it all kind of ended well, I guess. So I definitely do wish that I had more organization and that I didn't. I would not recommend applying to every single school the day the application was due.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say that that's how I navigated the process, which I wish I had a little bit more organization with.
So how did you decide on Yale? How did you decide to go to Yale?
Going into the admissions process, I knew that I needed, like, I wanted a full ride, which caused me to apply to so many schools, and I knew that Yale met full need and that, like, finances would not ever be a factor in my education, so that originally led me to apply to it, but it wasn't, like, sort of a dream school or anything like that, but around February, I got an email from my Yale admissions officer pretty much telling me that she wanted to schedule a call. And my overthinking took over a little bit. And I scoured pretty much every post on Reddit related to what this call could be. And it led me to sort of believe that it could be a likely letter. And so I get the call and I'm in physical therapy. And initially she's just asking me about extracurriculars. And I'm thinking that it's probably just a formality until she tells me that each admissions officer gets to pick one student from their regular decision pool to accept early. And she asked me if I'd like to be that student. And of course, saying yes, we talk more and we cry. And in that moment, I kind of knew that Yale was it for me. I live in Connecticut, so I'd be close to home. And I really felt wanted when I had that call with her. Imposter syndrome throughout the admissions process definitely lived in the back of my mind. But this call just really cemented the belief that I deserve to be there and that I was really wanted at that school. And checking my financial aid too on March 31st, it was my best offer out of every other school. So everything definitely fit into place. And going into the college process, Brown and Dartmouth were kind of my favorite schools. But throughout the process, I fell in love with Yale. And getting into all three, my family was a little bit shocked that I didn't really give either a second thought over Yale. I kind of knew right from that call that I was going to Yale.
Do you know what you're going to do there?
So I think I'll be majoring in the history of science, medicine, and public health, or possibly biomedical engineering. I'm on the pre-med track, so having an influence from the humanities with the history major while still majoring in something that covers a lot of the prerequisites for medical school is very important to me. Also getting involved with public health throughout high school, I fell in love with infectious diseases and innovations related to virology and vaccines and biotechnology, which is kind of where biomedical engineering comes into play. I love the idea of sort of like potentially innovating the ways in which we administer protections against infectious diseases through engineering.
Do you feel like you're ready for Yale and whatever comes after that?
I feel a little bit of those like first day jitters with meeting new people and making new friends. But overall, I think I feel ready. I've done programs such as like Upward Bound, Thrive Scholars that have definitely prepared me in the application process and with courses to prepare for like the rigor of college. They also helped me network with a lot of students that also had very similar mindsets to me. And being close to home is also nice. There's sort of that security blanket of my mom being like 35 minutes away for emergencies and such. And also like with friends, there's a couple Koch scholars and a couple kids from like other like scholarship retreats and stuff that I know going in. So it's nice to sort of have that connection with some students already built in.
Okay, so we're going to start winding down, Gianna. And before I let you go, would love if you could give some advice for high schoolers out there that might be looking at college maybe in a year or two.
Yeah, definitely. I would say, firstly, do not by any means hold yourself to the same standards of the people around you. So like, don't be afraid to apply to 50 schools just because everyone around you is applying to 20. And don't be discouraged when it's like Questbridge or it's early decision day and you see all of your peers around you have just gotten into like Harvard, Yale, or Stanford. And you know that it'll be months until, you know, like you get into a school. So don't compare yourself. I think that a lot of kids sort of fall into that mindset of, oh my gosh, like everyone just got into Harvard. Like, will I, like, are there any even slots left for me? For me, it was like the dead of winter. I was like going through Instagram and looking on LinkedIn. And so many kids that I knew had just gotten into their dream school. And I knew that that would kind of be a long ways away for me.
Yeah.
March 31st is forever from now. Like, this is going to like suck wind for it. But I would just say, yeah, don't compare yourself. And you never know, you might win a scholarship for $40,000 in May, while others win smaller amounts throughout the year. So again, if you see kids like winning all these scholarships, and you just got your financial aid package, you don't have enough money, you never know, because the biggest one might be waiting for you. I remember it was in May, I just recently won the Reagan scholarship. And for me, that was $40,000. And for a lot of kids, that might be their very first scholarship. And it's one of the biggest that I've seen out there. So you never know, you might just win that scholarship, and you might be totally set. Or you might be another kid who's winning them way earlier and feels a little bit of that more security, but they might be smaller amounts. So your paths are totally different, but they might lead to the same place. And I think that also the standards that you set for yourself need to be completely individualized to your needs, pursuits, and goals. You know, if you know you need a full ride to attend school, create a security blanket for yourself and really ensure that there are enough safety schools on your list that meet full ride based, that are full ride based on your estimated family contribution or your EFC. And lastly, I would say never stop applying for scholarships. Around September of last year, so going into my senior year, I really made it a goal to apply to one scholarship a day. It was a pretty loose goal with the amounts really fluctuating each week, but having a goal like that really kept me motivated to keep seeking them out and really ensure that my college education would be covered.
That's fantastic, and that's really inspiring, I think. And that's great advice, by the way. So, Gianna, I wish you all the luck at Yale and beyond, and congratulations again on your Koch scholarship and all the other scholarships that you have been able to win by just doing what you just said. And I'm sure we'll talk more and love to keep in touch and see how you're doing. But for right now, take care, be safe. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure speaking with you. I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi again. Hope you enjoyed our podcast with Gianna Thomas. You can see that Gianna was not just passionate about her interests, but very motivated to make a difference. witnessed the creation of the Public Health Committee and innovating a STEM curriculum for kindergartners and first graders. Winning the Coca-Cola Scholarship has provided her access to a network of experts in the form of the community of Coke Scholars. I wish Gianna all the best at Yale University and beyond. I hope this podcast motivates you during your high school years and offers guidance as you prep for your college journey. For your questions or comments on this podcast, please email podcast@almamatters.io. Thank you all so much for listening to our podcast today. Transcripts for this podcast and previous podcasts are on almamatters.io/podcast. To stay connected with us, subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, or visit anchor.fm/almamatters to check us out. Till we meet again, take care and be safe. Thank you.
College matters.
Alma matters.